Hey, good evening, everybody. I know everybody's still excited about getting back from the holidays, full of joy and all that stuff, which is good. Let's call this meeting to order. It's Tuesday, January 10th, 2012. The time is 6:06. Please turn off your cell phones or put them on silent. This is a County Board Committee of the Whole meeting for Eluk Highway and County Facilities. Roll call, please.
Bensel?
Here.
Bergson? Betts?
Here.
Carter? Cowart? Esri?
Here.
Holderfield?
Here.
James?
Here.
Jay?
Here.
Jones?
Here.
Kurtz?
Here.
Blankenheim?
Here.
Maxwell?
Here.
McGinty?
Here.
Michaels?
Here.
Moser? Nudo? O'Connor?
Here.
Petrie?
Here.
Quisenberry?
Here.
Richards? Marsalis?
Here.
Schrader?
Here.
Weigel?
Here.
Alex?
Here.
Hammonds? Anderson?
Here.
We have a forum. Mr. Lula called me earlier. He is probably won't make the meeting tonight. He says he's not going to the basketball game. A seek approval of the minutes of December 6, 2011.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Rosales, second by Mr. James. Discussion. See none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Please note Ms. Court has arrived. Seek approval of the agenda and the addenda. Moved by Mr. Esri, second by Mr. Rosales. I'd like to move the RTAG and reports to the first thing on the item, or first thing on the agenda after communications. Is that okay for everybody? So they can get out of here?
Sure.
All right. Any other changes?
Would that be the quarterly and the annual?
That'd be both.
Okay,
no, we're not. That'd be both. Thank you, Mr. James.
Try to keep you on your toes.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Public participation. Members of the public, if you wish to speak, please follow one of these forums and come up to the microphone. We have one tonight so far, Mr. Brian Adams.
Good evening. My name is Brian Adams. I live at 410 West Elm Street in Urbana, Illinois. And I just came in tonight, not to discuss anything that's on tonight's agenda, but to just get some sense about the one of the older buildings here in the east side of town, the old county poor farm. I've done a lot of research on Joseph Royer, the architect, and I've always been amazed about how well that building that he designed has survived. It's pretty much at its 100th anniversary right now. The process of the design and the building started in 1910, and I believe the poor farm finally opened in 1912, so it's really coming on its 100th anniversary. Recently there was an article published in the Historic Illinois Journal about the poor condition of the Coles County poor farm, and again, I'm always amazed about how well preserved our poor farm here is in this county. So I'm really here just to inquire or just express some thoughts about any potential anniversary celebrations or plans to landmark the building. Again, just curious because we're coming up on the 100th anniversary, and I really didn't know what the county has planned for the building. Again, it seems like it's still very well maintained and still functions for various purposes. So again, that's all I really wanted to come and express those ideas and maybe get some feedback from people.
Mr. Adams, we don't allow feedback during public participation, but you should talk to a staff member after or before a meeting, then you can do it. Call tomorrow morning and
okay.
Great. See what we can do.
Great. Thank you.
Any other members of the public wish to speak at this time? Seeing none, we'll close public participation. Moving on to communications. I have one. On your desk, you have a piece of paper that it's a blog called the Polygamy Blog by Lindsay Whitehurst. It concerns letters from Warren Jeffs. Most of you I have a letter on your desk from Warren Jeffs, who I believe is in a federal penitentiary for various crimes that I won't speak about. You've probably gotten some of these letters, I think last week in the mail. I have about six more for each of you in my office. We're being inundated by them. So I just want to let you know about that. But they basically say the same thing, that is, if we don't get Mr. Jeffs out of jail, the world's going to go to hell or something like that, and we're going to be responsible for it. What I'd just like to ask you, can I just recycle these? Is there anybody who actually wants to read every one of them? They pretty much say the same thing. Thank you very much. Any other announcements? Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you. Yesterday I attended a meeting at the Champaign City Council building. The intergovernmental agreement jurisdictions of the Clinton landfill that we proposed last month took its first meeting, and an executive committee was formed, and its first vote was to send a letter to the USEPA stating our opposition and legal challenge to the Clinton landfill. Also, Bloomington and Decatur were in attendance, and they're considering joining this intergovernmental agreement as well, and we're looking at other jurisdictions. But we sat and discussed from all these jurisdictions other options for the opposition to this landfill. I will update you as further information is available. Thank you.
Any other announcements? Seeing none, let's move on to our first item, which is the RTAG quarterly and annual report. Who's going to give it?
Good evening. My name is Andy Kulchitsky. I'm the current Rural Transportation Advisory Group Chair. One of the other hats that I wear is the Executive Director of Community Service Center of Northern Champaign County in Rantoul. The report that I'm presenting to you covers not an entire year, and it's based on the state fiscal year, which ends in June. So the data on the annual report you'll be receiving is from February through June of 2011. And I assume you all have copies of this. The first part covers some definitions as far as how data is calculated in terms of numbers of vehicles, total miles, etc. The chart below, right below that, shows you the increase that has grown in the need for transportation and how the program has developed since the inception of February 15th. And by the way, before I go on, personally I want to thank the board for showing the initiative in meeting the demand and the need for rural transportation in Champaign County. I've been director of Community Service Center for going on 23 years, and that need's always been there. It's been met in little pieces here and there. I've been on various committees, and finally, this one actually made it happen, and you made it happen, and I want to thank you for it. I hope you can continue to support it. The transit services are basically Monday through Friday, 7 to 5 o'clock. Small fees charged. As you can see, $2 if you're going between Ludlow and Rantoul, $5 if you're going to Champaign or Urbana. The number of riders, which is on the second page, gives you an idea where the folks are coming from that are riding. And these are unduplicated numbers. The first quarter, which was basically a month and a half, there was 20 riders from Rantoul, two from Urbana, three Champaign, and one Ludlow. As you can see in the fourth quarter, it went five times that amount. So the need was always there, and the data shows it very clearly. Any technical questions on the report? Amy Marchand, the director of CRIS, is here, and so is Eileen Sierra from Regional Planning. If you have any specific questions as far as how the transportation is going, we've been very pleased with the results. As I said, there's been a lot of folks, a lot of senior citizens, and with the price of gas, people that really can't afford to drive back and forth that have been utilizing the service steadily. Our agency was providing transportation using a minivan and volunteer drivers for a number of years, and we could never even come close to meeting the need. We saw how much a demand that there was, so it's exciting that this is finally happening. Before I go on to the quarterly report, are there any questions at this point?
Andrew, I'm not sure what a registered rider is.
Amy, registered rider.
Sure, that's a great question. A registered rider is somebody who has filled out some basic logistical paperwork with us and is registered in our system so that when they call, we have all that information to pull up from then on, and we can start tracking information about that person.
So it's assumed there'll be a repeat rider?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Questions? Ms. Petrie?
Yes. Couple of information questions, but first, again, congratulations on this huge success. It's wonderful to see this. The cost of the trip, for those people who really this may be stretching their income, is there any grant service so that some of this could be a little bit lower fare? It's $5, you said, for the...
In some cases, some social service agencies or other organizations have created a billing system with CRIS so that they could facilitate payment to the office and we could provide the ride. But the actual rural transit system does not have an additional way to remedy that.
Okay, then follow up to that. Are you finding any people who cannot afford, even though I acknowledge it is low cost, but any people that you can't service because of not being able to pay the cost?
Yes, and what's been interesting with all that is there is something called a Medicaid ride, and a lot of times organizations like ours does provide Medicaid rides, and that's something that we've never engaged in because of the slow payments from the state. It becomes very difficult to wait for the money, and so lo and behold, really just in the last few months, First Student, which is the organization that contracts for the Medicaid ride, has developed a way to purchase tickets for us for people on Medicaid, and what for many years has not been an option is now suddenly an option for folks that go through the process to get the tickets purchased through First Student.
That's excellent to learn. And then my last question, since you are having what looks like, according to the data you've provided, so much success Monday through Friday, is it coming to the tipping point that you might be considering service on a limited basis on Saturday?
We would love to get to that point. I think what at the tipping point we're at is the tipping point of the state not paying us for what we're doing so far. So that really, unfortunately, hampers our ability to do the things that we really are funded to do. It really does restrain the ability to go as far as you're technically funded to do, but there just isn't the cash flow to do so.
Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
And as Amy mentioned, other agencies do support the situations where somebody is unable to drive. We do that ourselves as well. On the quarterly report, which covers the first quarter of fiscal year 12, which is July through September, there's a little bit more information in terms of the reasons people utilize the transportation service. And as you can see, medical need and employment are the two highest categories, which is something our agency's known for a long time, and we were only able to provide the medical and social service part of it. The mileage traveled seems to max out around 17,000-18,000 miles. You can see the ridership again on the second page, where the folks are coming from, and people can get picked up in Urbana and taken to Rantoul and vice versa. At this point, with the number of vehicles and difficulty with state payments, I think we're kind of at capacity from what I understand. But hopeful that we can do something further down the road.
Mr. Kirk?
When I came here tonight, I noticed
fuel price just went from 3:30 to 3:45, 3:50, and we don't know where the top end is going to be now with what's taking place internationally. How is that going to affect your bottom line when you have to put that much more? Are you going to have to cut back on some of those?
The finances, I would leave again to Amy to answer.
So far, we're doing okay, but we are being extremely cautious. The Transit Board does meet February the 9th, and we will be reviewing the ability to continue at full service. Right now, we're very hopeful we're going to maintain that. The good thing about fuel is that Champaign Mass Transit, Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District has been extremely kind to Crucial Mass Transit. They've been a big brother to us, and they are allowing us to purchase fuel through them at cost.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just fabulous.
Thank you.
Another question there. Go ahead, Mr.
Amy, if you could stay up there. It's a financial question.
Yes, sir.
If someone was wanting to know, if they're listening tonight, or if they're watching us, where would someone go in the community if they wanted to see the financial side of this report? This is a numbers report, writer's report,
mm-hmm.
quarterly. And where would one go to see those numbers?
Well, the Eileen's office has that. Regional planning has that.
There's nothing posted on the website or anything?
Probably not.
Okay. Yeah, I have a follow-up, too, about the states. Our default state that we live in. How far back are we talking about payments from the state?
We're close to 6 months, and we're at $109,000 for this particular program.
$109,000 is not going to get any better. It's going to get worse.
Yes, sir.
It's getting better. So I hope that the county won't be asked to be.
No, we will not be coming to the county for a bailout. We take that response. The Crucial Mass Transit takes that on, and we do have a credit line that we're working with, but our bankers are getting a little stressed. So
I imagine, especially in this state.
Yes, sir.
Other questions?
Good. Thank you again.
All right, thank you. Okay, Howard.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Betts, second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Ms. Colbert, Highway?
Okay, can we take another committee report until John Cooper get here?
I'm sorry?
He's here.
He's here. He's hiding from you.
He's hiding me.
All right.
Okay, the Highway and Transportation Committee has two items to present in front of the board. The first one is the monthly report for the county and township motor fuel tax claim for December 2011. Okay, moved by Carol Ammons and second by Tom Betts. Okay, it's open for discussion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Next, we're going to the county engineer's report.
This is a petition from Kirk Township requesting help in doing some drainage repair. They meet the 0.2% value of the taxable property, and the complete value of the work done is $30,000, and they'll be paying about half of that themselves, and this is a request for half that amount.
Move approval. Second.
It has been moved and second. We're open for discussion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carried. Okay. Get any other business? Anyone? Seeing none, we're going to place 7B on the consent agenda. That's it.
Facilities this evening. We'll begin with the physical plant monthly report. Has everyone had a chance to view it? Would you like to make any comments, Mr. Maher?
The only thing I'd like to remind the committee is that on page 9, the expenditure report is not 100% complete for fiscal year 2011. We still have outstanding utility bills, a few minor ones. Next month it should be complete.
I'd entertain a motion to receive and place on file.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Jay, seconded by Ms. Cowart. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Update on 202 ARPA Martell construction project.
All of the projects listed, of course the building is finished, but all the licensings and permitting, owner items, maintenance area build out, fiber optic loop are all complete with under budget, under what was budgeted. Generator backup system for the Brookings facility was, study has been completed, so in essence we have lighting and heating project for Ilias South Garage is complete, and the only item left on here that's not completed is the East Campus Storm Water Project.
I'd entertain a motion to receive and place on file the report. Mr. James, seconded by Mr. Kurtz. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Now we're to the East Campus Storm Water Management Plan. We have a bit of the history sitting there with some of the documents, and at your desk there are some additional documents, one from a letter from Patsy Keithley, County Board Member, as well as this the coral-colored sheet. And I guess we're Mr. Clancy is here, Mr. Burns is here. It's open for discussion. Mr. Maxwell.
May I ask Mr. Burns a question?
If we're going to do that, why don't we ask Mr. Burns to come forward so that everyone can share the information? Is that appropriate?
Good evening. Tom Burns and Chris Billing here from Burns Clancy and Associates, and available to answer any questions you have.
Tom, the design life of the alternative that you propose using the aluminized steel pipe arch, what's the design life of that arch versus a concrete box culvert? What would you estimate?
Maybe Chris knows that.
Yeah, they're both on the order of decades. The concrete box, you know, you have to consider the environments and stuff. The concrete box is probably easily 50, 80-year type life expectancy. The aluminized steel, this will be generally completely underground, enclosed, and that's probably going to be, again, on the order of maybe 50 years. We expect it would be maybe a little less than the concrete. That's fairly representative, but the going to the aluminized steel instead of either aluminum or straight steel extends that life pretty long time.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like at this time to make a motion to adopt the storm sewer approach, the gray approach, utilizing the aluminized steel pipe arch.
Second.
There is a motion from Mr. Maxwell and seconded by Mr. James. I presume you were referring to the 380, $398,000 cost approach?
That's correct. It's listed as item one in this pink sheet.
I have a little bit of a concern here, and that is that we said we were going to do this in February in terms of taking action. I think it meets Open Meetings Act in terms of this item being on there, but it is not marked as an action item in the form of a motion on the agenda. Do we have any problem with the notice that there's not a notice that there's not an action? I'm going to reluctantly allow the motion on the floor for people to discuss. I have concerns about it. Ms. Petrie?
My comment and question are to the chair in relationship to this motion being on the floor. The information about the steel pipe arch is new information for us. And so I don't see how that comes under the Open Meetings Act proviso.
I think that I'm not the county's attorney. I am your parliamentarian and chair for the purpose of this meeting. My own view is that there was a motion to defer several months ago, and my recollection, and I could be wrong, was that it was deferred for action in February.
That's correct.
And I don't have the minutes in front of me to be able to say it was February or not. If it's February, then I think the motion's out of order. If it is not February, I think there's sufficient notice of the item itself for consideration. In such case, you could again defer the motion that is before the body. You could defeat the motion. You could amend the motion. I think the most critical thing I think we need to do at this point is determine what we did 2 or 3 months ago in relationship to when this issue was going to come up for action. Mr. Alex.
My recollection is that I believe that I'm the one who made the motion, and my recollection is that it was to defer till February, but I will attempt to confirm that from the minutes with the chair's indulgence.
That's what I'm trying to find out, too, because if that's the case, then it's out of order. Mr. Langenheim.
I move to table the motion before the House until the month of February.
Motion to table is not debatable. All those in favor of motion to table signify by saying aye.
Wait. Point of order. If the motion is not proper, then the motion to table is not proper.
That's true.
Correct.
We can't debate a motion to table. All those in favor of tabling signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion's defeated. Tell you what, while we're waiting to get an answer to our procedural question, why don't we talk about the substance? We can always rehash it next month. Mr. Weibel. Well,
that's exactly what I want to say. Let's talk about it first, let's get somewhere with it, right, or learn about it, and then we can always defer it if we want to, or whatever.
Of course. Ms. Emmons.
I'm interested in, we have a few items actually on the desk tonight that I haven't actually finished reading any of them, but I am interested in the differences of all of these that are presented in line with what the board wants. So if the board wants the green approach, then I don't know which one of these actually fits that, and or should we be looking for something that's a little more in our price range that is the green approach. And so I'm just kind of, the committee process just becomes more of a board when we start voting on things we've got
Just a, other questions? Ms. Cowart.
I want to know, have you all tried to work with Jeff Blue so that he could do some of the excavating project to help cut down the cost and also place the culvert box?
Yes, specifically, we did talk to Jeff quite some time ago. He suggested for, as we did the approach, the analysis, that we used all contractor prices, assuming that the County Highway Department will not be involved. That way, both, you know, anything we do is on the same equal basis, regardless of the number of alternatives. When it comes time to actually pursue the project, I think then there's probably another discussion they could have about, now is there an ability for the County Highway Department to actually do some of that work themselves or not? But that, at the time we talked about it quite some time ago, there was, he thought they would be busy this year, and so he felt it was better for the pricing to price all of the alternatives the same way, just using contractor prices. And yes, the county, I would expect they would have the ability to do that. I believe the short segment of a little over 100 feet of the box culvert that was put in a number of years ago as a part of the fleet maintenance building project, I think the county forces put that, actually installed that in the ground themselves. So I do think they have the ability to do either the box, the concrete box, or the pipe arch, either way.
Okay, they have an ability and equipment.
Yes, I don't know what they had to do as far as when they did the fleet maintenance project. You know, they could have had to rent a piece of equipment or something like that. But, you know, many contractors would have to do that too if there's something specialized. So I don't think that, you know, matters whether it's contractor approached, you know, pricing, or whether it's county highway pricing.
Mr. Benzel.
You probably have what I was just getting ready to say, but the October 4th minutes, it shows that it was deferred for 3 months.
That's correct. I'm going to rule the motion in order because there's a roll call vote to amend the motion to defer for 3 months, carried with Alex, Anderson, Bergson, Betts, Carter, Cowart, Kurtz, Langenheim, O'Connor, Petrie, Quisenberry, Richards, Schrader, and Weibel voting yes, with Ammons, Benzel, Holyfield, Jones, James, Maxwell, Michaels, Mosier, Nudo, and Rosales voting no. The motion carried. That was October 4th, 2011, and that is for 3 months. And unless the calendar has changed, I'm wrong. It would not be February, it would be January. So the motion is in order. Ms. Bergson.
When you're talking about design life, what happens if the EPA comes in and says this whole concrete and steel approach is not acceptable? And how much is it going to cost us when Urbana starts charging for our storm water? I think we ought to look at alternatives before we jump into this that we probably have to undo. And if we're going to build a jail, then I think we ought to get a coordinated approach instead of doing another piece and another piece and another piece.
Mr. Burns, is, first of all, on these stormwater projects that have gone on throughout the country, is there going to be an EPA inspection? Is that something that's the norm in this field after a project is completed?
Not normally, to my understanding, on a stormwater project will not have an EPA inspection process, to my knowledge.
Are you aware of stormwater projects that have been completed in the past 5 years in which the EPA has come in and said you did all wrong and you need to change to a green approach or a different approach?
Not to my knowledge.
I guess the other question I have, and I think it was a very good question on the part of Ms. Bergson, is in relationship to the jail, there's a potential that we would be adding a pod or something like that to the satellite jail out here at Brookins. How does a approach 1, 2, 3, or 4 integrate with that possibility, and is it accounted for?
Not to my knowledge. The stormwater management plan previously prepared in its prior form for you folks anticipated the expansion of the satellite jail facility and its expansion. The stormwater management for that facility is already included, already planned, and discharges to the stormwater detention facility that you folks built some years back. And it is not in the same subwatershed for which this current project is undertaken. And the prior stormwater management plan anticipated the expansion of the satellite jail. The site's there.
Okay.
And some of the basins are already built.
Mr. Jay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some concerns about delaying this any further. When we went through the process, the green plans, every one of the presenters said that the green plans would cost more, and they also would cost more to maintain, and then we get into this, we lose some of our ground, and we've got some utility concerns. It just seems like to me that with all the planning that we've done up to date, we could have had this done if we would have just went ahead and bit the bullet and let the architects, engineers loose with it. I think it's imperative that we get it done. I think that I do agree with our counterpart. I think there will be some law changes. That's why it's important that we get it done now, because we've already spent the money and the time and the effort to get this in place, and we could have it done before somebody writes a new stormwater management plan. And I quite frankly don't think that, and I'm not an attorney either, by the way, sir, but I don't think that that's going to affect what we do today, as long as what we do today is accurate.
Other questions or comments? Mr. Alex.
I have a question. I can't guarantee I won't have a later comment, but I have a question for Mr. Burns. Do you have an estimate for the total impervious area in the property? The reason I ask is we're seeing an indication that Urbana's current thinking on the stormwater, on their stormwater fee, is about $5 per unit, and a unit is about 3,000 square feet of impervious area. I don't know, have you run into this Urbana stormwater fee proposal? Have you been involved in that, or have you had other clients that have done calculations with regard to that?
Yes, but I've not compared that with those for the county process. I've been involved because of my management with the village facility for Clinton facility. I can't even say it. Clark Lindsay Village. I get my tongue wrapped around that. We've identified that and identified that cost, and part of their stormwater management facility will be anticipated by that process as well, just as the county's facility are included in that overall process.
So if I could follow up, do you have any more information than what was presented from the last set of minutes from the Stormwater Committee in terms of what the offsets or incentives might be for lack of a better word, greener solutions?
I've not seen the plan from the city to be updated.
What I'm looking at now is a PowerPoint from that meeting, which is sort of says about, you know, 490 to 515 per billing unit. A billing unit is 3,118 square feet. I don't see any real discussion of putting numbers around any stormwater management incentives, you know, incentives for using practices other than traditional sewage.
I've not seen any update from the city of Urbana.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions, comments? Mr. Weibel.
On the same topic, I talked to Bill Gray a couple of months ago, and he mentioned a figure, something like $35,000 for the county for a stormwater fee, but that's for all the property we own. And so I can't really say, you know, what the effects of the green practices out here, how would they affect that. Now, again, they said nothing about what the credits would be for green practices.
Other questions, comments?
I have a comment.
Sure.
Apologize for speaking twice here, but I've been, you know, following this, and the reason that I initially actually made a motion to defer this for 6 months, which was amended down to 3 months, And my intention in making that motion to defer was to allow some of these statements to the effect that there are other potential vendors, there are, you know, individuals who feel that this can be done for a cost that is substantially less than the proposals that have been presented here by BCA. And I have to say at this point, I've heard people say, oh yeah, sure, we can do this for a lot less, but I haven't yet seen anybody come forth and show how that can be done or make that in the form of a statement to the board. So I would like to, I guess at this point, hear from anybody who still believes that this can be done at substantially lower cost and give us some general approach as to how that might be done, because otherwise I'm inclined to support proceeding sending this to the full board with a recommendation for approval.
Astrid?
My understanding that the way that you would do this is to talk to another of the people from the RFQ thing, the next guy down or something. I mean, you can't just ask them, say we're going to deal with company A, but wouldn't you like to make a bid? This isn't a bidding thing, it's an RFQ. So unless you go to another company on your list and say, okay, let's see what you can give us, I don't think we can do it. Isn't that correct?
You entered into a contract with Burns Clancy to provide the cost information that you have here as a result of the RFQ. If you want to pay another engineering firm to do the work that Burns Clancy has done, I suppose that may be an option. However, from a legal perspective, I'm not exactly sure where you stand with the RFQ process to go to the next firm.
That's what it says in the book. I thought it was what it was told to the committee, that they, if they weren't happy with it, they could go to the next firm, which was actually higher rated and which was more prepared to do a green thing.
I think that's a possibility, but you would be starting over.
Yes.
Mr. McGinty?
Just in response to Astrid, I think, and Chris, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing that what Chris is saying is that he's heard other board members talk about that there must be ways to save, and yet there hasn't been any specific idea from individual board members on exactly how to make that happen.
Ms. Holderfield?
I do remember that several of us had made the comment that there was a, you know, potentially another company or maybe someone would step forward in a volunteer pro bono case. And I actually did speak with a department head at Parkland to see if there was some way that their classes would do a project pro bono for the county. And no one's interested at Parkland. They have been approached by so many people to do projects that they have a limited number that they can do, and mainly what the kind of projects that they do and involve themselves in are beautification and areas that we're looking to get into with these retention ponds, and they keep most of that work on the grounds at Parkland. So I have not been able to find anyone that would step forward to ease the burden of the cost to the county. So I think that, you know, and I did diligently do some research, and I don't know if anybody else did, but we did get turned down from Parkland College.
Patsy?
Okay, I have several comments. First of all, as to expectations by any board members that some professional is going to come along and do drawings and estimates without any remuneration, I think is, I'm trying not to use the word that's in my mind, but a little lacking of consideration of people's professional abilities. I do know several people in the community who I have consulted with to see if there are ways and means of doing a hybrid or a totally green solution that would be lower cost than is presented on this coral sheet, and the indication is yes. But those people are not willing to come forward and just do this gratis. I've been told, and I mentioned this at previous board meetings, that anywhere between $3,000 and $7,000 would get us some other information so that we can have some comparison to make a final decision. That's number one. Number two, I did write up a memo as to approaches that we could possibly be taking. There's nobody's breathing down our throat to do this project yesterday. That was confirmed the last time we had this on our agenda by Mr. Reinhart. We directly asked him that question. It does need to be done, no question about it, but Urbana is not going to fine us. Urbana is not pushing us, and so this gives us some breathing room. Three, we have the potential of a jail design coming up. We have the beginnings of a comprehensive plan for the county campus that was set aside due to the problems that surfaced in building the nursing home. One of the initiatives that has been identified by the Strategic Planning Committee is that we develop a comprehensive plan for facilities and the county campus. It seems that we continue to put the cart before the horse, and what we do, we silo all of our decisions, and this is again what is happening in, we'll do stormwater management and then we'll do something else and we'll do something else. And the Bartell building got placed in a spot that is probably did not enhance the stormwater management issue at all. And instead of stepping back as a county board and looking at the best interests of the county and looking at a comprehensive plan for this campus and then moving forward, which is what we should do, and that will not jeopardize us with Urbana, will not jeopardize us with what we may end up doing in approaches, and it will also give us time to see if there are grants out there, and it will also give us time to develop possible collaborations with some of the people at the university who do these projects, which will help us lower our costs. None of this has been pursued by the board.
Mr. Esri?
Yes, I just make a few comments. I guess we've all heard the saying, time is money. The farther this drags out, ultimately, if you ask me, the more it's going to cost, whether it's in more engineering fees from a different company, and or if we even go with this plan, eventually more labor and cost and or material cost. Second, to Patsy's points, we've already heard that basically the expansion of the jail is already included, so that's kind of a moot point. The strategic plan, it sounds to me like the number one or number two with either the Bosque culvert or the steel arch, one of the two, granted the steel arch being cheaper, sounds to me like that's going to be the less maintenance all in all for throughout the lifespan of the thing. So how is that not part of a better strategic plan for less money spent over the lifespan of it? To me, time is money, and we need to do something with this and get it done. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Mr. James?
Well, I guess when I hear all these comments about other vendors and people that come forward, I've been in the construction business, and I hear a lot of talk also, but my point is I don't knock on anybody's door. If they want to knock on mine, you're more than welcome to give me any proposal you want and take the time to do so. I mean, that's initiative, and we've started the process, and we look at it. And yes, time is money, and I concur with that, but I do believe that looking at issue and taking our time to do so, and when these things come up, I think we do a fairly good job. I do think sometimes it's rushed, but all this was put before us and everybody had the same information I had, and we could ask all these questions then, but it's always in hindsight we think that all of a sudden we've got this brainstorm that this is going to be a better way. And I think that, you know, we're talking about water here. We're not talking about a piece of ground that we can't go back and do something to if we want to put lily ponds or crabgrass or whatever it is we want to put in there. But we need to get the situation with the drainage going, and we can sit here and beat it up and have 100 proposals in here and we're all going to fight over it, but the bottom line is something needs to be done. And like I said, if these folks that I keep hearing about, and yeah, I've heard some comments too from folks, bring us a proposal. A proposal doesn't cost anybody anything, and I think there was a committee that got together and reviewed whatever proposals there was, and the outfit that got the quote or the proposal apparently was deemed the best at the time, so why do we keep arguing about it?
Mr. Richards.
I think that this approach and this motion are sorely lacking. I think that this particular gray approach is pretty much the lowest common denominator, the least amount of effort we could put in. However, I am very much in favor of a green approach, but we are not hearing what we are supposed to do instead. We have not been brought alternatives that are not just simply cost prohibitive. I would really like to vote against this, but I would like to hear some specific action people who are for the green approach think that we can take tonight to move forward and do something with this.
Ms. Emmons?
I just wanted to ask you a quick question. Once the RFQ is out, the person selected, they've done that portion. Phase in order to get to this part of it.
The intent of this RFQ is that this would provide a contract for engineering services through the completion of this project. That was the intent of the RFQ when it was issued. The county board elected to take a staged approach by, after selecting the engineering firm, to ask that it first provide two design alternatives because the county board wanted to see two options. So that was the first part of the contract that was executed with Burns Clancy pursuant to the RFQ process. I've always assumed that the remainder of the project would be completed with the selected engineering firm as intended by the RFQ when it was issued, but there may be some issues with regard to that.
I'm just asking the RFQ member if what you just described here, is that stated in the RFQ as part of, meaning I want you to do this part first, I want you to quote this?
No, the county board made those alterations to it at the point that it was being approved.
Okay, so in this committee meeting, basically, of course, people can vote however they want and it'll go to the board, but the process doesn't necessarily have to continue at this stage of the game if we've already fulfilled the first part of the RFQ.
You would have to start over with another RFQ for the whatever you determined is that you want.
But the RFQ that we initially did and fulfilled has been fulfilled according to what was issued initially.
No, I wouldn't say that, because the RFQ was for engineering. It was for engineering services for design of storm sewer extension for Champaign County East Campus. That was the RFQ.
But it doesn't necessarily say that if Company B was not acceptable to the county board that we could not go and call Company A. Not what the RFQ actually says.
That's not what the RFQ actually says, but procedurally and legally, I mean, I would
I'm
have
to see where that actually is in your statement, where that is, that we can't reject. Once we do an RFQ, the county will reject what's being proposed by any company. Where would that be legally that we
okay.
could not reject?
You have at this point completed the first stage of the contract that was executed as a result of the RFQ. It was $36,000 to provide two options, two alternatives. That's what the contract said. To continue on, if a decision is made tonight to go with the particular recommendation, additions to that contract need to be completed by the board to indicate that we're going through the entire project. The intent of the RFQ was always that you would select a firm for the entire project. The county board, in responding and when selecting this firm, decided to take a staged approach because it did not know, you, the board, did not know which option you were going to adopt, which has an impact on the balance of the contract with the engineering services firm to complete the project for you.
And can you just direct me on our website?
you look at business contracts and agreements on the website, it will provide you with the link to all the contracts and RFPs and RFQs, and I believe it should be there. I think it's there.
Ms. Hardfield.
Call the question.
There, Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, I'd like, I have one question, and I don't know if anybody in this room knows this, but if they have knowledge or insight or predictions with regard to how long the city of Urbana is going to take with their process of coming to a stormwater management fee, I'd like to hear it.
Mr. Burns, do you have any knowledge to that?
I have no expectation of another government body.
Ms. Bergson.
In the chair, wasn't there a motion to call the question?
The chair didn't recognize him. Ms. Bergson.
Can I ask for a parliamentary ruling on that?
The chair, the parliamentarian chair must recognize the person, and I didn't. Ms. Bergson. That's parliamentary procedure.
Mm-hmm. In the RFQ manual that we were handed, it said that, you know, if you weren't pleased with the proposal from the first one, and you were allowed to ask a great deal more than we did about them, that you could go on to the second one. That was in the manual. And as a matter of fact, the committee had rated another company higher than this one, was told that if they didn't like it, they could go on to the second company.
But you selected this firm and entered into a contract with them. That's in the process of going through the selection process. The selection process was completed when you selected this firm and entered into a contract with them.
Then you cannot go to the second company, as it says in the RFQ manual?
You know, that's a legal question that I really can't answer. We would have to get a legal opinion on that. Well, you can't really ask him to answer a question on the spot.
Is there any further questions germane to the actual motion on the floor? Mr. Alex.
I apologize for belaboring this. I actually don't. I think the call for I would like to have seen the call for the question be recognized, but I do think I need to say, I mean, there was, one of the board members, I think it was Ms. Petrie, said, you know, we can't expect essentially, you know, stamped, signed, and engineer estimated plans for nothing, and I certainly agree with that. I mean, I'm an engineer myself, and I would be reluctant to do work for nothing. What I was hoping to see in the period of this deferral was not, you know, signed, stamped plans and an engineer's estimate. I was hoping to see something along the lines of, you know, everybody else is suggesting a brick building, but we can do this with a wood building, or everyone else is saying you need a, you know, a semi-trailer, and we can do this with a pickup truck. I mean, I haven't seen, in the comments that we've gotten from the outside experts, I haven't seen game-changing comments that weren't essentially couched in, well, we think you should do the best management practices approach because it's what you should do, or it's what the EPA is going to want you to do eventually, or it's going to save you money on the stormwater fee, but I haven't seen what I thought was going to be this. I haven't seen any evidence of a, you know, fundamentally different game-changing approach, as would be suggested by the statement that one of the other potential vendors said they could do this for, you know, half the cost. So I just haven't seen evidence of that. And I guess one more comment for the county administrator. There certainly do appear to be, based on our discussions in caucus over the last several meetings that dealt with this, there seems to be a disconnect between what members of the vendor selection committee and members of the board felt they had available as options if they were not satisfied with the approach that Burns Clancy provided. And I can't know who is right or who is wrong here in terms of who told who what, but I am concerned that we got into a situation where I think people are making decisions based on a misinterpretation or misunderstanding of what our options were as board members. So I would hope that in future similar situations, board members ask more questions and the county administrator is more forthcoming in terms of deciding or explaining exactly what our options are, because I do think there are members of the board who felt that we were had more flexibility in this process than we now are told that we have.
Mr. Binzel.
I'd like to call the question and request a roll call.
We'll have a roll call.
Second.
I already said we're going to have a roll call.
Well, I mean,
is everyone ready for the roll to be called? Okay. Yes is to adopt the $39,000 storm sewer approach with steel pipe arch. Does everyone understand? We're voting on that, and we'll go then to full board.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. To clarify, it is to recommend to the full board. Is that
That's correct.
Correct.
And then it would go to the full board. Clerk, call the roll.
Benson?
Yes.
Bergson?
No.
Betts?
Yes.
Gasser?
Yes.
Holden? Yes. James?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Kurtz?
No.
Langenheim?
No.
Maxwell?
Yes.
McGinty?
Yes.
Michaels?
Yes.
O'Connor?
Yes.
Petrie?
No.
Quisenberry?
Yes.
Rosales?
Yes.
Schrader?
Yes.
Weigel?
No.
Because I can't.
Alex?
Yes.
Ammons?
No.
Anderson?
No.
No.
It was Rosales.
Look at me.
Motion carries. That's that. Okay. We argue it in 2 weeks.
Okay. Consent agenda?
That's
it? Okay.
Sure.
Next up is ELEC, Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you.
Did you call him?
I don't
know.
I
don't know.
Good evening. Go to page 2, number 9. We'll open with annual renewal of recreation entertainment licenses. Number 1 for Curtis Orchard Limited, 3902 South Duncan Road, Champaign, 1112 through 1231-12, and I so move.
Second.
I'm sorry, I can't move anymore. I like moving. Okay, we'll give it to Mr. Betts to move a second. Mr. Schroeder, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Number 2, Gaudyville LLC, 2205 CR 300 North Gifford, 1112 through 1231-12. Mr. Essery, Diane, a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Number 3, Lake of the Woods Bar and Liquor, 204 South Prairie View Road, Mahomet, 1112 to 1231-12. Mr. Maxwell, Ms. Holderfield, second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Number 4, Tin Cup, RV Park Incorporated, 1715 East Tin Cup Road, Mahomet, 1112 through 1231-12. Ms. Holderfield, Mr. J, the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, do this one. There goes John. Okay, next, B, direction to zoning administrator regarding proposed zoning ordinance text amendment to amend certain wind farm standard conditions. If you go to page 75, please, you will note a memo explaining our process for changing the wind farm ordinance and improvements that were identified during public hearing of our first wind farm. Just quickly, I will read it so that you understand where we're going here. The County Board approved the California Ridge Wind Farm case 696-11 in resolution number 7966, November 17th, 11. The case was the first ever used the wind farm zoning requirements, and several needed improvements were identified during the public hearing of that case. Any change to the zoning ordinance requirements for wind farms must be adopted before the next wind farm application in order for the changes to apply to that application. It has been rumored that the next application for a wind farm special use permit may be received in February next month. If the committee agrees with the proposed amendments and authorizes the zoning case to proceed, the public hearing will begin in February 2012, and the amendment should be returned to the committee as early as March, with adoption at the full board in April. All right, we're going to have a discussion on this, and I think a motion to open that discussion on...
Point of order, there's no motion is needed.
No motion is needed, okay. Carol, start the...
I just want to ask why the change 7 and 8 change from reclamation agreement to a simple requirement for site plan.
Okay, we have the state's attorneys here. He's going to answer that question for you.
Those questions?
Our previous ordinance required a reclamation agreement between the developer and the county. That is a technique that's been used in other counties, and I'm comfortable justifying that, but it is an unusual technique in Illinois law, and I think it's a more straightforward application of the zoning statute to just simply have what we were asking for as part of an agreement be part of the conditions of a special use. In addition, by making these terms conditions of a special use, if the developer doesn't like those terms, they're forced to seek a variance, which is a much more stringent process. It basically forces the developer to justify deviations from what we want more carefully. Does that make sense? Sure.
Go ahead.
The reclamation agreement, if they submit a...
The terms of the reclamation plan would still be conditions of the special use permit. They would still have to comply with the terms of the reclamation plan, or else they'd be in violation of the special use permit.
And this puts them
on... Right. The way it was previously stated, there was a reclamation plan that our office was involved in negotiating with the developer. This actually requires them to give us what we want or seek a variance at the front end. And the variance process is a lot more stringent than negotiating with me.
Mr. Alex.
Ziegler, to restate that another way, it sounds like we're... Can I call you Mr. Ziegler?
That's fine.
I'm sorry. No,
that's okay.
It's
Fletcher.
Joel
Fletcher.
Keith.
ZBA?
I don't know
why
I say Ziegler. I know who you are.
I hope to have something from your neck of the woods.
At least I didn't call you Ms. Reitz.
Okay.
So what you're saying is essentially that before this was handled by what was essentially a side agreement between the developer and the county, and in this case we're proposing to make it actually integrate it with the special use permit.
Right. That side agreement was ultimately adopted as conditions of the special use, but this just makes it more directly a condition of the special use.
And you believe that makes it more enforceable if whatever does come to that?
Yes, I believe it does.
Thank you.
Mr. Weibel.
Mr. Hall, I have several comments, questions for you. Look at page 77 of our agenda. Top paragraph, you talk about documentation of compliance must be submitted prior to receiving a zoning compliance certificate. Go to page 78, the middle of the page, you talk about the permanent erosion sedimentation control plan. There it has to be submitted and accepted prior to approval. The question is that the way you want it, once prior to approval, once prior to accepting, to receiving the certificate? Is that the way you want it different, or should it be the same?
The proposal here in item 1 on 77 and mm-hmm. item 6 on 78, this is exactly what we're doing with the current wind farm. I believe it will work for that wind farm. I believe it would work to change the ordinance that way permanently.
Okay, I just know it's a difference in wording. I just want to know if that's the way you want it, that's fine. I'm happy with that. On page 77 again, the second paragraph, we have stated there, all agreements shall be executed prior to the close of a public hearing before the board. I think you should make it clear, is that a county board meeting or ZBA meeting?
This is in the zoning ordinance, and the zoning ordinance defines board as Zoning Board of Appeals.
Okay, so a definition don't exist for that. Okay, I'm fine with that then.
Yes. Yeah.
Going on to, let's see, I took my notes on your first, from the original copy, so I have to move it around here. When we're talking about the removal of the foundation concrete at a minimum of 54 inches, I'm not sure where that is in the agenda.
That would be on page 80.
That's on page 80 now?
Under subparagraph I, or H.
But the question is, if a landowner has an agreement with the wind farm in the process of setting up their agreement to have the turbine there, could they have it to a lower? Could they have it at, say, at, you know, 72 inches if they wanted to?
I guess they could. The county would not enforce that.
Right, but I mean, certainly the landlord could do that.
I would assume
okay.
So.
Okay. The other question is about average salvage price. Again, that moved around, but I know it's in there somewhere. Oh, it's on page 82, second paragraph. I think we need to have a definition of what average salvage price is, because is that the average salvage price at say, Danville, at Mervis, or is it here in Champaign, or is it in Chicago or St. Louis? Or is it, you know, what we get from the companies is sort of a national price. I mean, is there any way we could come up with a better definition of that?
I'd be happy to try.
The good reason is I ask because, obviously, you know, the average salvage price for Chicago may be different down here because you'd have to transport it somewhere. Or, i.e., where would the metal go from Champaign? What smelter would it go to? Would it go to Chicago? One in St. Louis? You know.
We asked those very questions of the engineer for the last wind farm. Now, again, this estimate is to be done by a licensed professional Illinois engineer using their judgment. I don't think that you can match that judgment if you write an ordinance trying to set it down into simple text. So the question is, we would remove less flexibility by having a more defined requirement in the ordinance. That could well end up making the process, in effect, cost more if this ever has to happen. Frankly, I think you're better off getting the best opinion of a reputable engineer and then accepting it or not. But we can certainly try to nail that down.
I guess perhaps, you know, put into some ledger that takes into account the transportation costs of delivering the metal to the salvage site or to whoever takes it.
And again, in the last wind farm, we asked that question. We were told that number was in the estimate.
Okay.
Now, given the nature of that estimate,
I would like to ask maybe what that cost is. Maybe we can find what the transportation cost is, so we have an idea what the actual salvage value of the metal only is. Is that possible, you think?
Well, we don't know how much it'll take place. There's no way it is.
Well, how could you think about it?
I actually don't. We could include a list of items here that have to be considered in every case. I really, frankly, think that's the best we can do.
Okay. All right. I'll go with your opinion on that. And let me see if I have anything else. So again, this is a again, I look at my old notes. You have a statement about any wind farm permit is otherwise derelict for a period of 6 months. Do we have a definition of derelict?
That is not defined. No.
That's not defined. Perhaps we come up with a definition of that.
I'll refer that to the attorney.
Well, I note that in paragraph D, we already...
What page are you on there,
Joel? I'm sorry, at page 83, A-7, last series of subparagraphs. In D, we already refer to a wind farm turbine that appears in a state of disrepair or imminent collapse and or creates an imminent risk of...
Okay, all right.
So that provides some specific guidance. I think derelict in subparagraph E was intended to be more general because we can't predict every possible way a wind farm could cause a problem.
Right. Okay, all right, thank you. And finally, there's nothing. We have nothing here about recommissioning. I don't think this needs to be done right away, but I think down the road there will be, you know, possibly they might be using the same towers, putting in a new pod with a new size generator, and then they have to, you know, apply for a new permit. You know, and it's possible that they may change nothing but, say, the generating power of the unit, or they might make other changes. I think that we have to make a decision, you know, like, do we charge them the full amount for getting that permit or not? You know, perhaps the, and also if you put a new pod in there, is that going to change the height of the tower off the ground, which may have some effect on noise or flicker? So I think we need to think about how we're going to handle recommission. Now, again, I don't think that's going to be a problem for some years, but it's something we need to work on down the line.
Yeah, the ordinance is pretty clear. To me, anything that is bigger or puts out a higher capacity or changes a physical dimension so it's actually bigger triggers the need for a new special use permit, and it's a full fee.
So the question is, I mean, do we really want to charge a full fee? I guess is the question for that. Because
or even higher.
Well, we can do that. I mean,
even higher.
Because it could be that they're just, you know, swapping out a generator, and it's exactly, nothing's changed. It's the same size pod, and so on and so forth.
If it's the same size and no higher.
No, I'm talking about the physical size is the same, but the generating power is different.
Yeah, that would require
a
new special use permit.
So instead of 1.6, it's
1.7? Whatever.
Okay.
So I think that, you know, we have to decide, okay, if they're just making a simple internal swap, do we want to charge them a full fee or not?
Would this committee like to give direction?
Anyone? Diane?
I think if it changes, it ought to be charged.
Well, the question is, are we going to charge them a full amount?
What? Yeah, are we going to charge them $4,500? That they originally had to pay for the original turbine.
Well, the reason I bring this up,
license, you get charged the full amount for the whole new license.
Well, the reason I bring this up, because I think it was actually Mr. Schrader initially asked that we have a fee that covers what our costs were, if I was correct, you know, a couple of years ago, I think, that makes sure that whatever we charge, we cover the cost for our staff to do all this. So, of course, if we want to make money on it, that's fine and dandy, but I think that's something that we might want to consider.
Well, there's two issues here. There's the issue of the special use permit and then the issue of the zoning use permit once that's approved. You are not recovering all your costs on the special use permit. You're covering your costs on the zoning use permit.
Right.
You're not losing money on wind farms overall once they go through the permitting process. But I know that we spent more than $20,000 reviewing this wind farm in August, September, October, and November.
Chris, did you have something?
Yeah, but to the main discussion.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I mean, Diane, your question's completed, right? You're okay? All right.
Chris? I did not get this reading the first time, but I think Mr. Weibel's comments made me wonder whether the issue with salvage value isn't the lack of definition of the phrase salvage value. And I'm wondering if perhaps a definition to clarify that salvage value is, you know, net of transportation and disassembly costs and so forth, would clarify that. I mean, this question about, you know, how much will they give you per ton at Chicago versus St. Louis? I mean, I think what matters is how much they get after they've paid to disassemble and haul the thing. And I don't know if we have a definition of, if there's a legal definition of salvage value, or if there's any ambiguity there, it seems like we could correct it with a definition.
I'm not aware of a statutory definition of salvage value. It's certainly something we can define in the ordinance if the board feels it needs more clarity.
What the engineers come up with.
I guess my point is if our intent is to say the dollars that they're going to get back after having disassembled, hauled, which I think is the intent, right? It's not the price per ton. It's the price per ton that they get. I mean, mean, whether they sell it to somebody who comes and does the disassembly themselves and charges them for it, or whether they pay the cost of disassembly and then scrap, the end result should be the same, right? It's the amount net of the cost required to get that, to turn that into salvageable material.
Also note that we dropped it to 70%.
Yeah, I noticed that. I'm just trying to address Mr. Wild's question about...
We tightened it up because we wanted to get a few more bucks up front for the decommission.
About how do we ensure that the engineer is giving us the number that we think the engineer is giving us, and a definition could help clarify that. I'm not willing to raise to the level of making an amendment to this, but I think if that's something that the zoning administrator feels would help, then I'd encourage us to look at it.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Any other... Patsy?
Yes, I have a number of items, and I'd also sent a number of items to Mr. Hall when he asked the board members to respond. To Mr. Weibel's question about clarity as to which board is being referred to, I've mentioned to Mr. Hall previously that one of our goals on anything that we, any documents that we approve, should have some user-friendliness to the citizens of the county. And if, in reading documents, they have to go back to something else to find out what board is this, and definitions, I do think that could be ameliorated just by putting in which board you refer to, and some of the definitions I requested be added to this, so that it's definitions that are specific to this ordinance, not general zoning definitions. So it's much easier for the general public to read and understand. I do have two items. I don't know if they are amendments or just to put on the table, hear from our legal counsel as to the propriety of these, and if there is, and if we could envelop them into this improvement of the wind ordinance. The first has to do with the removal of 54 inches of concrete. I don't see anything in the wind ordinance that has any stipulation as to what is used to fill that hole. And what I'm referring to is the type of soil. Illinois law and strip mining, when reclamation is done, has specific requirements that the site is supposed to be returned to where the site was. Wind ordinance. And the other, which Mr. Hall and I discussed, while I'm looking at it on page 91, it's D number 1, and it reads at least once every 3 years for the first 12 years of financial assurance, and at least once every 2 years thereafter. I'm very concerned about the second half of that, and I had asked that be every year, and the reasoning behind my request is we have no idea down the line who will own these wind turbines. None of us will be around on the board. Mr. Hall probably will no longer be the zoning administrator, so there's a lot of history that will not be in existence, and I think it's to the benefit of the county to have a report every year. And Mr. Hall countered that this would take too much time. I countered back that I don't think so. Once this is set up in a matrix for the company to do this, it's easy to plug in new members, and it should not be difficult to do.
Does Mr. Fletcher want to respond to any of those?
I think that those are, present policy questions. I don't see any legal problems with addressing both of those concerns in the ordinance. It's up to the board whether it's a policy matter they want to do that. And I can, if you do, I can work with Mr. Hall on language. But like I said, I don't see a legal problem with that.
Mr. James.
Response to Patsy's item about referring to whichever board it is. I deal with legal documents, construction documents, and if the public wants to read them, they can have at them, because it's over my head sometimes. But Mr. Hall did state that there's a list of definitions, much like when I started this county board. I didn't know what ELEC was until someone told me, and thank goodness we don't spell it out all the time and I have to read all that. I think it's fine. The people that are looking at these documents know what they're looking at. They're you know, up to date on what they need to be. And as far as the general public, I have yet to find any of my friends that sit around and talk to me about reading all this and wanting to know what board we're talking about.
Ms. Maxwell.
Oh, man, question. Perhaps, John, you could...
Use your microphone, please, Mr. Maxwell, so we can hear you.
Perhaps, John, you could explain to me. On page 80...
Page
80.
80.
At the bottom of the page, it says shall... there's an item that says shall be 210%. And then on page 85, there's an item that says shall be 150%. Explain to me, are they the same thing or the item?
John, can I? Do you mind if I respond to that?
Feel free.
Requirements listed on page, I believe it's 85, the 150%, those are requirements applicable to all non-adaptable structures, which could be a wind farm or it could be a roller coaster for an amusement park. But you'll see on page 85, there's an exception there for requirements specifically set forth at 6.1.4. P, that means that the one specific to wind farms, the 210% trumps that for wind farms.
Okay. Any other discussions? Comments? Okay. Where are we at this now? At this point, I'd like to get a motion from the floor to accept these changes for the wind farm ordinance.
Point of order. We're just giving direction to Mr. Hall to make these changes.
Okay.
We have to have the changes back to us before we can actually discuss and vote them. So we're just giving direction to Mr. Hall. Mr. Hall, have you gotten direction? Except maybe for me, I confused you. Sorry about that.
Well, I've sort of gotten multiple directions, but...
I'm shocked.
I'm ready to proceed if this committee is finished commenting on this.
That's good. Okay. All right. Thank you. Let's move on. Monthly reports. You have your monthly reports on your desk concerning the December report and summary for fiscal year 2011. Are there any comments or questions on those reports?
I'll make a motion to place on file.
Second, Mr. James. Second, Mr. Rosales. Any discussion on the reports? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Business. We have nothing on the consent agenda. And clients?
We have one item left. The MLK proclamation, normally this would be on the policy agenda, but because of the calendar. Mr. Beth, second by Mr. Richards. Discussion. The reason is that the annual event, which is this Friday, you're all welcome to come here, is before policy, so I thought we'd better do it now. Discussion on this proclamation, which I might now include the Parkland and U of I. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Seeing that, we're adjourned.
So you're going to be.